Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Okay, we will do... Oh, shoot.
For all of her too short life in music and the 20th century's cauldron of change, Nina Simone posed the question, what's happening?
Hey, we're in the middle of a revolution, because I see the face of things to come. Yes, I do.
It was a revolution in music and politics, and it seemed to erupt from Nina Simone's mouth in words and sound, no matter what she was singing or playing.
Oh, cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day, will I run to?
Those two songs by white composers, Randy Newman's Baltimore and Les Baxter's Cinnamon, details. Everything else came from deep inside one of the most influential musicians of the 20th century. The question, what happened, Miss Simone, is a quote from the late poet Maya Angelou. It's the title of a documentary up for an Academy Award, as they say at the Oscars. Jason Jackson, producer. He's a longtime music manager, worked with the likes of Lauryn Hill and other big, intense, successful artists. But he speaks of the making of this film as something like a religious experience.
She's a mythical figure in the artistic and activist community, but I was always attracted to some sort of humanity in her story somewhere, and that's sort of what set me off on this whole journey.
There's a soundbite in the film where she says, and this is during the peak of her activist period, my art is going to reflect my times. Mm-hmm. And she says it with a look of just, this is obvious. Doesn't everybody mm-hmm. understand this? What was her crossing of the threshold, do you think, in this story?
Really interesting. And that was one of the more amazing things that came out during the research for this film and actually reading her diaries that she wrote down about her life. She felt a particular distance from the civil rights movement for a long time because she was born and raised in the Jim Crow South in a small town called Tryon, North Carolina. And though it wasn't the crucible of Jim Crow, she certainly felt it and talks about it in the film where she says the railroad tracks literally divided the town black and white. She felt like racism and discrimination was always going to exist and complaining about it was really going to do nothing. But she felt differently when she became older and the Alabama church bombing of the four young black girls happened. That's literally when I think she was thrust into the movement. And, you know, her exact words were, I wanted to pick up a knife and go outside and hurt people.
When the kids got killed being that church, that did it. First you get depressed, and after that you get mad. And when these kids got bombed, I just sat down and wrote this song. And it's a very moving, violent song, because that's how I feel about the whole thing.
Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows.
That's the turning point, and actually when she wrote Mississippi Goddamn.
Nina's daughter describes that everything fell apart, that riding this wave, this artistic wave, was a journey to complete chaos. How do you understand that, and how do you see that in the film?
You see her throw herself into the civil rights movement, not just literally through her art, but figuratively. It was something she couldn't stop thinking about, really, and It's a tough thing to reconcile when you're doing so well professionally, particularly as a person of color during that time period. But most of the people that look like you in the country are having hard times and don't even have access to gainful employment, and they're discriminated against on a regular basis. So I think it planted the seed of a kind of paranoia that only really successful artists can understand and contemplate. And I think we still see that today, even in contemporary times. I have to say, you know, Beyonce's Formation video just released recently is an example of that. I mean, who would have ever thought an artistic statement would cause police departments nationally to refuse to provide security to a pop star? So it's just as interesting now as it was then for artists who step out.
And again, it is a stepping. You step into these waters, and it's a very dangerous place. You've experienced the work of Lauryn Hill, right?
Yes, yes, sir.
It's kind of the same story.
It's very, very interesting. You know, I actually met Nina Simone while working with Lauryn on tour in Paris in 1999, and I wasn't even aware of who Nina Simone was. But her presence was so large and strong, and she came in and cleared our dressing room. The interesting part is I was looking at Lauren's mom, who was with us, and was like, who is this woman that, you know, Lauryn is responding so strongly to? And I realized her mother was in tears. And she said, that's Nina Simone. She was the soundtrack to my life. And that's sort of what began my journey of finding out who she was and her importance to people of color here in America.
Why is it so obvious that she knows the difference between what's authentic and what's self-serving? Because there's not an inauthentic moment that you ever see on screen in this documentary.
Yeah, yeah. And Ambassador Shabazz, Malcolm X's oldest daughter, I think she sums it up at the end of the film where she says, you know, Nina lived, she lived more honest than most people are. I don't think she had the ability to filter her thoughts or her emotions. And in the world of art and music, it played out wonderfully, and we obviously all loved it and enjoyed it. But in the regular world, it sort of became a hindrance for her because she really didn't have a filter and didn't know how to make people feel good about the things she was saying. She just felt a particular way and let it fly.
There's a musical moment in this film that just turns me around and around. And I'm going to read the lyrics. I say when he died, he told me all my life, he said, keep on working.
I said when he died, he told me all my life, he said, keep on working, girl. They open up the door, one of these days, you won't have to wait much longer. Just tell them exactly how you feel, so I'm gone.
So powerful.
I mean, who's speaking there?
And I'll tell you an interesting story about the tribute record we made. I asked Lauryn to cover that particular song. So she went up to the ubiquitous YouTube and found the original song, but the original song is very different than how Nina performed it. And I was like, yeah, but I think if you do it the way Nina did it on camera, it would be a really, you know, powerful moment. And she said, Jason, that's the spirit right there. You can't cover the spirit. That's her. That's the essence of who she is in the way she delivered that song. And I was like, I kept saying, no, but you can do it like that. And she was like, no, I cannot do it like that. Only Nina Simone could do it like that.
Jason Jackson, what a delight speaking with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
Jason Jackson is a producer of What Happened, Miss Simone, also producer of the tribute album. He spoke to us from Los Angeles.
One day I woke up and I could fly. I looked down at the sea. And I wouldn't know myself. I'd have new hands. I'd have new feet.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. Don't start any revolutions this weekend, or go ahead. This is the segue.
Support for The Takeaway comes from the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. The Takeaway's resilience reporting is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. For more, go to rockfound.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.